Oh, so as I walked into the church tonight, I was here about 6:30, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I am really feeling nervous. And I was like, God, if there's anything you can do to kind of take my mind off of this. And John walks around the corner, and he comes in for a hug, and he says, where's the literature? I went, oh, it's at home. So I quickly had to go home. I got the literature. I came back, and I completely forgot about being nervous before. Thank you, John. Woo! So I am going to start my talk with today's, or actually tomorrow's meditation, because it's pertinent to my story. Not alone. On our journey, we need the assistance of a trusted friend with knowledge of recovery. The ACA Big Book tells us that we're trained with 72 seasons, 18 years, of learned survival skills that turned into dysfunctional behavior as adults. Knowing this makes it seem unreasonable to expect total recovery in a few meetings, a few hours, with the ACA workbook or even a cover-to-cover read of the Big Red Book. In cases of divorce, it says it takes a year of grieving for every 5 years of marriage. If we translate that formula to our circumstances of grieving, our ACA soul rupture, it becomes even more understandable that recovery is an ongoing process. And it can't truly happen without the help of our higher power and fellow travelers who were able to lead us away from years of frozen emotion. ACA recovery has had its ups and downs, no matter how hard we work it. So it's important to know we can relapse, just as in other 12-step programs. However, an ACA relapse can take us into periods of sadness and isolation. This becomes less frequent as we continue to give ourselves permission to be human and to make mistakes. We learn to put down the mirror of harsh judgment to let the life and serenity in. So I want to tell you a little bit about my journey to ACA. I'm going to give you a condense because I just have 15 minutes. I was 11 when my mom and dad divorced, and 13 when they both remarried. So I was faced with four parents, two step-parents, which was just a glorious time. None of the four parents had problems with drinking. My father's father was an alcoholic, and I had three rageaholics for parents. So three of the four were pretty gnarly with the rageaholic, especially my mom. And the family dynamics was very, very, very dysfunctional. I have seven brothers, and there is a female stepsister in the mix, but I don't claim her, and another story another time. Like most of us in these rooms, I was a broken child. I was sexually abused, physically abused, mentally abused, and felt very alone and very lost amongst the seven brothers. My first attempt at suicide was when I was 12 years old. I yearned for my daddy when my mom and my dad divorced. And when I wasn't with him, I did everything in my power to get my mom's attention. I soon learned that doing good didn't get it. So I would do whatever I could to aggravate the tarnation out of my brothers or be bad. It got to the point to where there was probably a 3 or 4 year period where I was spanked with the belt every day. I was teased at school for my shyness. I was the tallest kid in school. I had my size 10 feet when I was in fifth grade, so I got called boat feet, but I was very fast. I attended 10 schools by the time I graduated from high school. My father was a federal agent. My stepfather was a Methodist minister, and that's a whole nother can of worms. So we moved a lot. Absolutely a lot. My stepfather was what you call a circuit Methodist minister, and we had four churches at a time, four small North Georgia churches. These were towns when I was growing up that if black people came in, they chased them out. If you were not part of the small town, it was insane. But we heard the same sermon four times, and it was just absolutely torturous, especially when my stepfather would use us as an example. And he was actually one of the rageaholics in the beginning, and it was very difficult to hear about the Word of God from a man who was so very angry. My counselor actually told me when I was 14 that I lived in an alcoholic home without the alcohol, and I never understood what that meant until I walked through these doors. My mom and my stepfather lived on very meager earnings. I remember the church people would bring us food, and we never asked questions. Well, the kids never did. The parents did. And we were always grateful for the food. And I remember one time we had this barbecue meat that was a little different than what I'd had before. And we asked my mom, "What is this?" And she said, "Oh, it's beef, it's barbecue." Well, we found the aluminum foil in the trash can, my brothers and I, because we were bound to figure out what it was. It was barbecue raccoon. So that is the one and only time we ever ate that. And I did ask questions next time. As a young adult, from what I remember, I lived out of my car for a while, which just about killed my father because I was a user. I was so self-absorbed and so into myself that I would live with people and I would just not do anything but just be a couch potato or a bed potato. And I was disrespectful and I just got turned away so many times. And I was with my dad and my dad was like, "You can eat here, you can bathe here, but you can't sleep here." And I remember hating my father. I will tell you today that my dad and I talk about this periodically, and it's one of the best things that ever happened to me because I had to learn that lesson. I survived a rape that made me just horribly sick. I experienced so many overdoses. I began to look at charcoal as another form of food. It was just, oh. I landed in jail on several occasions, lived in my car. I was a drug addict. I totaled 10 cars during that time. Now I'm a retired stunt woman, so I know how to drive, but this was under the influence. I shoplifted. I dealt coke. I had absolutely no regard for my life or anything else about it. I was a total mess. I progressed to the point in my addiction where I was smoking about an 8-ball a day and doing Quaaludes to come down. I was sleeping maybe 2 hours a night, and I lost everything. I lost my house, I lost my car, I lost my furniture, I lost my clothes, and I thought, "Girl, you have got the worst financial problem ever." And I went and I lived with my mom. And after 1 week, my mom came up to me and she said, "I'm not going to watch my daughter kill herself. You either get help or I'm going to have to ask you to leave." And I thought, yeah, right. So I went out on this huge search to find a place to live. And this is one of those times where my higher power is so key. I must have looked probably 30 places and there was no availability. And I remembered, there's this place called the Atlanta Women's Shelter. I'll go there. And I remember walking up and I walk up the stairs and I open the door and there are cots and cots and cots and cots and cots, and rows of women and children. And I just broke down and I knew that I was an addict and that I needed to get some help. I went into a halfway house after being in a hospital for a week to bring me down off the coke, and that was the beginning of my recovery. So it was time to get serious about making some changes in my life. And I started with the obvious, the drug abuse. Through working another 12-step program, I became a productive and responsible human being in society. I discovered tools to rebuild the walls of my house. And there's a few of you that have heard me talk. For me, the program, 12-step programs to help you get clean and sober, they're the house that you build. And we'll come along to this in a minute. The ACA is where you get in the basement and you get to dig up the skeletons. And you find out why you used in the first place. So life continued as I was participating in Narcotics Anonymous. And although the disease of addiction was in remission, I had never dealt with what got me there. So I knew it was time to attack the skeletons and to tackle the family dysfunction. And I knew something was missing, but I wasn't altogether sure of exactly what it was and what it had, you know, what I needed to do. Again, I was praying about it, and I met this really tall guy who was a friend of mine through another club, BMW Motorcycle Club. And we were talking. He's like, "Have you ever been to an ACA meeting?" I'm like, "What?" And he says, "Well, come on." So when I walked into the room, this is what I heard, and these are some part of my words. Common characteristics: isolation, fear of people, and fear of authority figures. Check. Difficulty with identifying issues related to constantly seeking the approval of others. Check. Frightened by angry people and personal criticism. Check. Have become an alcoholic, addict yourself, married one or both. A variation would be the attraction to another compulsive personality, such as a workaholic. The similarity is that neither is emotionally available to deal with overwhelming and unhealthy dependency needs. Check. Perpetually becoming the victim and seeing the world from the perspective of a victim. That I had dealt with in the other 12-step program. Whew. An overdeveloped sense of responsibility. Concerned with the needs of others to the degree of neglecting your own wants and needs. This is a protective barrier for avoiding a good look at yourself and taking responsibility to identify and resolve your own personal difficulties. Check. Feelings of guilt associated with standing up for your own rights. It is easier to give into the demands of others. Check. An addiction to excitement, feeling a need to be on the edge and risk-taking behaviors. I thought, oh yeah, I'm a retired stunt woman, so check. A tendency to confuse feelings of love and pity, attracted to people that you can rescue and take care of. Check. Avoidance of feelings related to traumatic childhood experiences, unable to feel or express feelings because it is frightening and or painful and overwhelming. Denial of feelings. Check. Low self-esteem. A tendency to judge yourself harshly and be perfectionistic and self-critical. Check. Strong dependency needs and terrified of abandonment. Will do anything to hold on to a relationship in order to avoid the fear and pain of abandonment. Alcoholism is a family disease which often results in a family member taking on the characteristics of the disease, even though they are not alcoholics. Dysfunctional relationships, denial, fearful, avoidance of feelings, poor coping, poor problem solving, afraid that others will find out what you were really like. Check. Tendency to react to things that happen versus taking control and not being victim to the behavior of others or situations created by others. A chameleon, me. A tendency to be what others want you to be instead of being yourself. a lack of honesty with yourself and others. Definitely. So with a startling realization, I knew I was home. I was exactly where I needed to be. And most importantly, I was not alone. So what has ACA done for me? I have learned how my family dysfunction that affected me in the past, how it affects me as an adult today here in the present. By working the steps and practicing them on a daily basis, by focusing on the solution, not my problems, by accepting a loving higher power, by attending meetings to share my issues and my recovery, by listening to others and developing a network of ACA family of choice, I have begun a recovery, a journey of recovery. I have learned to integrate many of the laundry list traits and have started to remove defects of my character, which I never thought was going to be possible. I have discovered my loving parent and am learning to push my self-doubt aside. I have grown both emotionally and spiritually. I have been able to establish a healthy relationship with my mom and have begun to heal old scars. And I never thought that was going to be possible. Finally, I have found a way to sever my chains of dysfunction. And I tell you, if you do what I've done the last 2 years, it will take you on a journey through self-discovery that is unbelievable. It's not easy. It's going to be really hard sometimes, but the rewards are so great. I just am so grateful. I am so grateful to be here, and I'm so grateful that I have this opportunity to talk to you. I've discovered through all of this that I am worthy. I've discovered I am loved. I am lovable. Most importantly, I've discovered I'm not alone. And I'm home. Thank you.
Can you get a hug? Yes.
Yes, you may.
Wow, let's thank George again, please.